Well, it's good to be back with you again after we were away last week. And I want to thank Richard for preaching last week and for Shirley for leading the service and for Paul for setting everything up and our musicians and all of you who were here last week. It's wonderful to have read Richard's reflection and to seen what a rich time that you had. And for those of you who don't know, Neil and Mum and I and Neil's son Alex have just spent the last 2 weeks driving to Alice Springs, participating in a workshop with the Aboriginal teacher and speaker, Miriam Rose Ungenmeyer, and driving home again. It was a rich time in conversation with Miriam Rose and with others who had gathered. And so in this reflection, I wanted to bring something of this experience into conversation with our commemoration tonight of Mary, the mother of our Lord, which, as I mentioned earlier, is the feast that was celebrated earlier this week. So let me begin by just saying a little about our time in the centre. Some of you might remember that 2 years ago, in 2016, we participated in a conference called Deep Listening to the Spirit of Place, actually called Exiled from Country, Deep Listening to the Spirit of Place. Miriam Rose was a speaker at that conference. Miriam is from Daly River at the Top End, and she's well known, at least in some circles, for her teaching about Dadiri, which in her language she describes as meaning quiet, still awareness and deep inner listening. She says it's what you people call contemplation. And it is a contemplative practice. It's a way of being, as with contemplation, it's a way of being in the world, and it's a particular practice. And a focus is on attending deeply, listening deeply to the world around you, to the trees, the wind, the streams, the rocks, as well as to yourself and your own relationship to the life around you. That was a really significant time for us, both in awakening to this practice, but also in beginning to glimpse more deeply the connection of Indigenous people to country, which again many of you will be aware of, and again for some of you perhaps a little new. Then last year Neil and I participated in a desert journey with another Indigenous teacher to continue that learning. And this time what we were just at was a workshop, in a sense a follow-up, with Miriam Rose, a group of about 40 or so seeking to go deeper into this practice of listening to land and deeper into conversation with her and her experience of listening and of faith. So she spoke, as she had earlier, about Dadiri, deep listening. And because since the last time we'd heard her, we ourselves had been much more aware of seeking to practice this kind of listening. This was a kind of a deepening and continuing of what, in a sense, we'd begun a couple of years ago. An added dimension of what she offered us this time was an introduction to her artwork. So Miriam Rose is a very well-known, very gifted artist. And also with her was her nephew, Troy Mulveen, who's also an artist. Some of you may know the book, which is called Our Mob, God's Story. It's issued by the Bible Society, and it's 100 years of engagement with Indigenous people and the Bible Society, and it has paintings of a range of people from a range of different countries, their interpretations of different aspects of the Bible. It's up there. On display. And both Miriam Rose and Troy have pictures that are in that book, and we learnt more about some of them. One of Miriam's more famous artworks is her Australian Stations of the Cross, which it's a series that was painted in 1974 And a reproduction of the whole series is in the front of this book. I wanted to show it to you, but it's too small from a distance. But please feel free afterwards to come up and have a look at the book. She described her painting as prayer, as a form of prayer. And it made us think, obviously, of icon writing in the Eastern Orthodox tradition and how the painting or the writing of icons in that tradition is a form of prayer. And as you contemplate these panels, these Stations of the Cross and her other images, they are also like icons in that they take you through themselves and point to the reality beyond them, point to the reality that they symbolise or engage. I've several times heard Lawrence Freeman, from the World Community for Christian Meditation, he's several times in my hearing said that Christianity is in the first instance a symbol system rather than a belief system. It's a kind of fruitful notion to ponder. Mary is one of the most fruitful and potent symbols in the Christian tradition. And Miriam Rose's portrayal, her icons of Mary, I find extraordinarily powerful and illuminating. So that's just what I'd like to share a little bit about tonight. Because we're not a highly techo church and we don't have an overhead projector, I can't show you this, but you can see it in the panel. There are two main panels in this Stations of the Cross which depict Mary and Mary's participation in that journey. The first one is quite a spare image quite a stylized. The faces aren't pictorial. They're kind of representative faces with lines painted on lines or dots. But in this image, Mary is facing Jesus, who's carrying the cross, and it's just the two of them in this image: Jesus with the cross on the back, Mary facing. And her hand is reached out and his is reached out, and they're touching hands like this. So there's this connection, but there's also this distance between them, or this space of separation between them. And Miriam Rose explained that in her tradition, Indigenous tradition, once a man has been initiated and become a man, his mother no longer hugs him or embraces him. It's a kind of symbol of that he's now become an adult and is separated from the mother. So this touching is this kind of extraordinarily intimate but restrained touching of a mother for an initiated man, and that sense of her having to let him do what he must do without clutching or trying to cling. The second panel that she's painted is after he's died, and at that point a mother can once again hold the body of the son. So the juxtaposition of these two images is very, you know, very powerful. And Mary's, in the way she's painted Mary's body and Jesus' body, they merge into one. So they're painted again with dots and lines, but you can see that very deliberately she's aligned them so that it's the same dots and the same lines. It's like they've become one. She paints just what Simeon had spoken when Mary and Joseph presented the infant Jesus in the temple. This child is destined to be a sign that will be opposed, so that the inner thoughts of many will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your soul also. At one level, of course, the idea that a mother's soul would be pierced at the suffering and death of her son is obvious, natural. It's an experience we share with Mary in many ways. When we love someone, we suffer what they suffer. Their pain pains us. You can think of many instances of this. You think of the agony of parents as they undergo, as they launch their children into the risks and hurtfulness of the world, beginning with the risks and hurtfulness of the playground and all the risks of rejection and misunderstanding that come there, through to adolescent anxieties, broken hearts, sometimes serious illness or abuse, even death. It can be the same for children caring for parents as they suffer dementia or illness. And for partners and friends of those who are chronically depressed or anxious. It hurts to see those we love struggle with failure and defeat, with aging or dying. And though, of course, there are things we can and must do to help one another, there's also necessarily a level of powerlessness we must accept in all our relationships. We can't take another's journey from them. We can't take their place in the trials of their own lives. But this is hard. And it's the difficulty of remaining alongside, of embracing the suffering that others' suffering causes us. It's not the same suffering, but it's still a suffering. It's the difficulty of that can lead us to abandon people, either overtly or covertly, when they most need us simply to be with them. And what I think Miriam Rose's painting captures so deeply in this image of Mary and Jesus sharing the same body is that she remains, just as Mary Magdalene remained. She stands by the cross with Jesus to the end, not trying to rescue him, dissuade him, yet not abandoning him either. They consent to suffer Jesus' suffering. And the poet Nicholas Slee writes of Mary's experience of this, echoing the reading we just had. This is a poem called Circumcision. She offers her baby to the knife, all trusting and openness. Her own body will be pierced over and over in ways she doesn't know yet. Before the story is barely begun, swords are out. So just two kind of comments. The first is that it strikes me that the power of this symbol of Mary, this possibility of consenting to our suffering of others' suffering, this goes beyond our personal relationships of care and sorrow. It relates also to the possibility of being deeply present to the suffering of creation, of people we don't know, the wider world. And in our context here in Australia, Miriam Rose's icon of Mary is, it seems to me, a powerful invitation to be with Indigenous Australians in their suffering of the impacts of colonisation and their continuing struggle for proper recognition and acknowledgement of their prior place in this land, their culture, their gifts and language. Of course, again, there are things we can and must do to address the injustices of the past and the many that are still perpetuated daily by racist attitudes, by inappropriate interventions and policies. But some causes of Indigenous suffering aren't able to be quickly or easily fixed, and many can't be fixed at all. I met an older woman at the gathering who told me, "I've seen my last corroboree. It's gone." There's the loss of language and land, the families forever sundered, the children and young people who have taken their lives or become lost in addiction, displaced between worlds. And our Western culture is so impatient, so unwilling to suffer with, to be alongside as Mary is, unconsoled. We just want to close the gap, to solve the issue and make it go away. And if the suffering and the outworking of trauma seems unending, and all our best intentions don't work, then we blame the recipients or rush around coming up with some other strategy we think might work better and quicker. But it's our impatience that just makes it so much worse. And one of the themes that came through from a number of the Indigenous people who were present at this workshop was almost a cry, "Will you stay with us a while? Will you stop trying to fix us and instead learn to be with us and journey with us? Will you bear your discomfort long enough to help us bear what we must bear and find our way through all that has happened to and among us?" What this looks like, of course, is not easy to say. But this is a conversation I think we need to be open to. And Mary can teach us. And the second comment. I said earlier that part of the power of the symbol of Mary is what it shows about the possibility of consenting to suffer the suffering of others. But it shows more than this. It shows that this consent is itself a necessary participation in bringing about God's healing of the world. Mary's passion symbolizes the human vocation in the work of salvation and reconciliation. In this icon, we do see God is present. Grace is active. But our participation is required. And Mary is the one above all who offers herself bodily, with every ounce of her being, so that love may be born and division healed. So as we remember her tonight, as we gaze at this icon of her total openness to God's action and suffering love, I pray that we too may learn something of our part in the healing of the wounds of our nation and of the world.